You're listening to the Rubbish Trip Podcast. Two no-waste nomads talk trash with people in Aotearoa, New Zealand.
I'm Lily, Marketing Manager for St. Vincent de Paul.
Hi, I'm Caroline O'Reilly and I'm the Sewing Coordinator and Recycle Coordinator and Sewing Tutor. RESO is a recycle initiative which is taking waste from Vinnie's op shops. Things that we can't sell because it's out of season, it's damaged, but it still has something that could be used in something else.
We sat down with Millie and Caroline from Vinnie's to hear more about the Vinnie's ReSew project, an upcycling, sustainable sewing initiative focused on repurposing some of the donated textiles that cannot be sold in Vinnie's op shops. These textiles are bagged up and brought to Vinnie's Kilburnie, where they are resorted into cottons, synthetic fibres and pieces of textiles. They are then either transformed into new products, repaired for resale or passed on to other community group projects. The Vinnie's ReSew program not only saves textiles from going to waste, it's also a work experience program that invites participants from Vinnie's welfare services, new immigrants and refugees. The opportunities the program provides to create and to share and learn skills associated with sewing and crafts is rewarding, fulfilling and brings generations and communities together.
The atmosphere up here when it's full and everyone's talking and creating together is amazing.
And supporting each other, because what you'll see is two people sitting next door to each other and somebody's machine will go wrong or they'll be stuck on something and then they'll start chatting and they'll just, oh yeah, you do it like this, or let's try.
Our conversation also ranged further, delving into what Vinnie's ReSew can show us about the wasteful habits our society has constructed when it comes to textiles, and the little things we can do to change our own approach to clothing and to turn the tide on the sea of textiles we currently send to landfill and our country's op shops every year. We started by asking Millie how it was that ReSew came to be.
We've been looking at ways to expand the work of St. Vincent de Paul. So we are a welfare social services. So it's quite, it's a New Zealand that's 150 years old and it's maybe closer to 300 years old internationally.
Yeah.
So they've always done work like with food banks. We have a social worker, pregnancy assistance. We do home support, visitations, and pretty much anything that people need, we can just try and figure out how we can support them. So ReSew kind of came into it as a good works initiative. We do work experience programs. So this, a huge part of this is to be a work experience program for volunteers to come through from our welfare clients, prison bridging programs, and other community groups that have individuals that can go back into full-time work, but they may just need to get back into the routine of turning up on time each day. The confidence to just be able to be out in public again sometimes is a huge thing, so this has become a really good platform. And then being able to deal with our textile waste is just a huge bonus.
Yeah, can you give us a little bit of a sense of perspective about what the scale of that textile waste looks like before the ReSew?
So our Newtown hub, which is our main store, which is where mainly all the clothes are, and that's where all the donations come into, we spend a month, $1,800 a month on dump costs.
Wow.
There's the percentages out at the moment. We have often about 30% of what actually comes in is usable.
30%?
Yeah. People may be thinking they're doing a good thing, but the reality is if you're not going to wear it, not necessarily someone else will. Like if it's got a hole, we can't really sell it. People aren't going to pay money for that. And people often say, especially within our welfare services, that just people should appreciate what they get. But there's still a dignity to it, and they deserve to have something that's wearable and nice. And then there's just the rubbish that comes in. It's often used as a dumping zone for people not to get around the dump cost themselves, or just to get rid of their own junk. So there's a lot of rubbish that comes through. And even in the clothing bins, they might be good clothes, but then someone will chuck in
cups of coffee or dead animals.
Dirty nappies. I think someone found a knife in there once.
Oh no. So that can ruin.
That can just ruin a whole bale of clothing. So yeah, the reality is that it's huge, and that's for the majority of the charity shops around. They all face it. Like if the amount of waste that we dump is lot, so when you combine every other organisation it's quite a lot. Yeah.
And we had heard about 6 months ago, we went to the Wellington Southern Landfill and we had a tour with the Waste Minimisation Officer there. She said textiles are the fastest growing source of waste stream to that landfill in particular. So,
what would be great in Wellington is to actually have a shredder up at the landfill and for them to do a social enterprise project where they bring in the textiles, they're stripped of all the zips, the buttons, and any of the lycra is put aside because that jams it. But what it does is it shreds the fibres into a small amount and they can be used as stuffing. So stuffing here is really expensive and people are having problems actually getting hold of it. And there's a request for people are coming in and saying, have you got any stuffing? Could you shred us some fabric into stuffing? It's like, well, yes, we could, but we'd be here all year doing it. So there's definitely a need for it, and or it would be a way of actually reusing it within the community, a bit like they do with the compost, because if people could come up and get it for their household and their, you know, sewing and stuff like that. But it's actually overwhelming. So the amount of fabric that you see over there is actually only probably 3 deliveries to us of about 10 bags from our store.
Wow. And so just to be clear for people who are listening, that's about 4 shelves?
Yeah, four shelves high.
4 shelves high, wow. And it's all very neatly folded into very large piles on each shelf. So,
and coordinated.
Yeah, it's very beautiful.
It's the rainbow wall.
Riso is based in Kilburnie, but so you're collecting textiles from the Vinnies from across Wellington.
Yeah,
Wellington.
We've got 9 shops in Wellington Central. So this is run by St. Vincent de Paul Wellington, so we go as far as Tudun Park. The idea is if we can get this model down pat, that it'll be great to be able to roll this out with the other Vinnies throughout New Zealand.
And when you're saying that sort of some of this clothes, they're not salvageable as clothes, they might have a hole in them, but are you finding that a lot of it can be salvaged and for what, you know, through Riso?
Yeah, so even if it can be salvaged for bags, even if it's got stains on, we can actually patch on an applique and then cut away the stain afterwards, or we can take a small section of a pretty pattern and just use that. So one thing that we found really successful has been napkins, is taking, if we get a batch of 4 or 5 napkins, we can sew those together into bags really quickly because they've already got seams on them, and they're really, really effective as little ones, as little girls' bags.
Oh, they're so cute.
They are cute, aren't they? And they're really nice for new sewers because they get to sew straight stitches round corners, they get to put handles on, they get to do a bit of applique. So they're really nice, and everybody loves hand. And now that actually the supermarkets are getting rid of plastic bags, there's a real incentive to do it. Yep. But also what we're finding is we're getting requests for fabric. So when we get in fabric, we'll look at it and we'll think, okay, is that good for bags? What type of company or group can use that? So for example, Boomerang bags. So we save a particular type of fabric for them. We give away fabric to schools for doing their projects, community centres. We're also getting requests from community centres to make things. So we're making a blanket for Picnic in the Park, made out completely of jeans. So we had a stock of jeans, we didn't know what to do, and then we got a request from the local Newtown community, could you make us a picnic blanket? And we thought, right, we'll make it out of jeans. But then they need, for the festival, they need a way of covering the bins to stop people using the standard street bins. So we thought, we'll just sew the sides up, we'll put them over the bins, then at the end of the day they can use those as laundry bags. So it'll have 3 lives. And then at the end of the day, if they don't want that, they can cut it up again and they can remake it for another blanket. We'll be putting up vintage textiles, bits and pieces that we get that are really beautiful, and vintage clothing that we get donated that we don't want to. So there's a lot of things, a lot of us feel like we're the custodians of people's collections, when they bring us their fabric cords and they're from the 50s, 60s and 70s, and so there's sometimes bits that we feel we shouldn't cut up and that they should go to other sewers out across the country. So we'll be putting those on Facebook, on Trade Me. And also what we do is with our 100% cotton shirts, we cut them up into squares, and we're going to be selling those on Trade Me to quilters so that they can make quilts, because they have such fantastic checks designs and they're beautiful soft cottons because they've been worn. So we salvage the best bits of them, save the buttons for the baby knitters, so they take the buttons, and then we'll be selling the fabrics.
Amazing, you've got everything covered.
No, we haven't. Any ideas people have, please send those as well. We're always open to ideas. Yeah. And what people are finding exciting is when they unveil that, they'll find something, even if it's a small bit, and they'll go, oh my God, I want to make that. So we all see up there, there's an ever-expanding project box where people protect bits of fabric that they want to make something up. Yeah, but it's also lovely as we keep getting, they email me saying, oh, can we make this? Can we make this? And they're all on Pinterest trying to find stuff, saving magazine articles.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, the enthusiasm is amazing.
You've been having a really positive response from
the
community.
Oh, yeah. We've had up to 80 responses now for being a volunteer.
Wow, excellent.
Yeah. It's only a month and a half we've been operating.
And it's lovely because there's different types of people coming in and supporting each other, and especially new immigrants who are coming in who, you know, they've been here 3-4 weeks looking for work, and then they've talked to everybody here and they've then got the connections and they've got email addresses to contact other people, so people are actually finding work as well coming through.
And so do you sort of teach people to sew as well? Like, if people come and they don't know how to sew already, they're still welcome?
Yeah, they're welcome, because there's always cutting. We've got somebody who comes and does documents for us. We've got somebody who's an organiser who just comes in, looks at how processes are done and says, right, you have to label that, right, you have to write instructions for that. We've got a health and safety person who's coming on a Saturday who will guide us through all the health, look at where the risks are, and we'll write those up for us.
A while ago we were in Palmerston North and we interviewed a place called Reclaim Timber Traders, who are rescuing wood that would otherwise go to landfill that's still perfectly usable. One thing they said, apart from the waste of throwing wood away, what you're also throwing away is this potential university of learning, because wood is such an excellent medium to do all kinds of things, creative projects, teaching people, and just how you're describing the joy that people are getting from textiles, and think all the stuff that's going into the landfill, it's a huge shame.
Yeah. It is a huge shame.
Like the atmosphere up here when it's full and everyone's talking and creating together is amazing.
And supporting each other, because what's interesting, I mean, I obviously can't teach everybody all of the time, but what you'll see is two people sitting next door to each other and somebody's machine will go wrong or they'll be stuck on something, and then they'll start chatting and they'll just, oh yeah, you do it like this, or let's try. So that's really good. So what's great for me and a couple of the older people is we get some massive students come in, and even though we've been sewing for 30 years and I was teaching for 7 years, the Massey students are teaching us. So we're learning off them, but they're also getting the experience of teaching people. So that will be great for when they go into industry and they have to work with other people. They're already getting experience of working with much older people, different cultures, which they won't get at university.
Yeah. It seems that there are these projects happening all around the country, and we've seen several of them, that are taking something that's a valuable resource that is being wasted on a large scale and turning it into this hub, a community hub, and offering opportunities for people to get employment skills and to teach and to learn. What is it about something that's wasted that can bring so much together? It's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. I suppose what it does is for me, it brings out an innate thing in us that must go back generations and generations and generations ago. So this is how people used to live. We in the last 2-3 generations, have adopted a way of living that didn't exist. So a story I had was, just before I was leaving England 5 years ago, I went into a shop, and it was a old barn, and it was called Brocante. And the lady said, you can't go in there. And I was like, I want to go and see the... You can't go in there. And then out came these two people who had feathers in their hair and they looked like Jack Sparrow. And the girl was in this amazing dress, and they were designers. They'd been sent over from Japan. And I was like, oh, what's in there? Anyway, she let me quickly scuttled up the door. And there were these tables, and they were piled high, about 10 layers high, full of fabrics and clothing, and something fell on the floor, and I said to her, oh, that's a uniform from Brittany. And she was, oh, you know a bit about textiles? I said, oh yeah, yeah, I used to know a bit about textiles. So she said, wait till they go. Anyway, when they'd gone, she pulled back, and what had been happening was the ragman from France goes around the communities and he pulls out all of the old clothing from the attics that have been there for centuries. Mm. And the French now don't want it. So that he collects it and he ships it over to England, and she then sells it to the designers. And there were these amazing things. But what brought it home to me was I was surfing through it and I bought out this little jacket, and it was threadbare but was so beautiful because it had been darned hundreds and hundreds of times with different colours. It was all these beautiful patchwork. But they had been so poor that they had made a button out of the top of a coat hanger.
Oh.
And it was I could see it was actually done in the 20s, but the way that it had been restyled was for the 40s, so this was during the war. But there were also petticoats that were very little of the original fabrics. They had just been darned, and people had loved that from generation to generation. It had been handed down. And what was ironic was that it was being bought by Japanese designers, Paris designers, Italian, and it was being copied. That today, that's what would have been a rag to the French now, had been valuable to their relatives, was now valuable to the designers. And she said to me that there was one skirt that she'd sold for a few hundred dollars, was I think it was something like $2,000 came up in auction, and it was basically just threadbare.
Wow.
In Japan. And they had now become, and it's like Boro. You know, Boro is a Japanese fabric that's designed, has been sewn together, it's bed sheets, and now they are sell for thousands. That people are suddenly realising the value of that handcraft that we've lost. And to me, it's innate in us. There must be something in us that this awakens, that we remember our ancestors used to do this. And it feels natural.
Yeah.
What has happened, this fast fashion, is not natural.
Yeah. Yeah.
This waste is not natural. And I think that's partly why mental health is. People don't value what they have anymore. They're not finding pleasure out of the things that we used to find pleasure, our ancestors found pleasure.
Yeah.
Well, and it saps our creativity and our resourcefulness as well.
Yep. Whereas this, people are going away and they're sparked because they're thinking, what can I make out of this? I have to research, I have to think. And I think what's come out from this project is the amount that people are beginning to use their brains again when they have to work out a problem. So they're standing there and they're saying, how do I make this? What do you think? And they're starting to have conversations to problem solve. And they're like, I haven't problem solved like that for years. I've never had to, because it's all been instructions are done, told how to do it, just followed. Now they're having to think for themselves and they're loving it.
Obviously, this is having many, many positive benefits, and it's saving things from landfill, and just seems generally positive, but it's quite a new initiative for Vinnies and probably isn't common around the country as well. So if you don't mind me asking, why is this something that isn't happening, or why is it something that's so new? What was the motivation really for Vinnies to step out and start doing this in Wellington that hadn't been there before?
I know this particular initiative, like there's variations of it that's happening, but Charity Shop itself looking after its own waste and doing that in a proper program. I know that a lot of shops do, they have volunteers that augment things in the back and that, but a proper program I know is a new thing, especially for Vinnies. None that we're aware of throughout the world, and all the Vinnies throughout the world.
It's the building. It's the fact that we have a building with a mezzanine floor, which can't be used for anything else.
Right.
Now, if we didn't have the mezzanine floor, I don't think it would be here. Land is, and rents are high, and that's the problem, is the investment that you actually need to get it kicked off. The actual capital investment for the machines we've got donated and everything, so it's been very small. But if we had to pay for premises, then it's expensive. What Vinnies has funded is obviously my salary for the 6 months at least, for the pilot and probably on, because it's been so successful. But a lot of companies don't, and organisations don't have that money to invest. The other thing is that Vinnies previously, as announced, because I've only been employed by Vinnies for the last 4 months maybe, is that they've had an autobred program before. So I'll let Millie tell you, but they've already done something similar in a different area before. So for them, it's much easier. They can see the benefits of what happens when you invest up front in a program and you let it run.
Yeah, because we do have an altar bread program, which is making altar breads. They're the communion hosts at church, the little white wafer-looking things. So those are produced in our hub in Newtown, where our main office is, and that they're created by a team run by a supervisor, and the team or have intellectual disabilities. So this is paid work, so they get a salary and can come and work 9 to 5 and just sort of have that normality of having a job. So that having already had that structure, and that program's the only one in New Zealand through Vinnies as well. We actually run a loss on that project, but the importance of having it available to the team there is, and the impact it has on their life is huge. So that's why Vinnies doesn't mind funding it at a loss, because it is comes under as a good works or welfare project. And that's the same with this, is that the importance is that welfare side of it, of putting people through a program to go back into work or study. So that's why they don't mind funding it, which a lot of organisations don't have. They don't have that backing. So the fact that our Vinnies Council gave the okay to put money aside for this project was a huge thing. I know it originally started with my manager John came to me and said, "Oh, I really want to start a Vinnies fashion label." I was like, "I just think that would sell, that we could make all this money." And I was like, "Whoa, okay, let's." And so I think it was about a year ago, and over time we kind of evolved his idea to fit more of what's possible and what would fit Vinnies. And that kind of evolved into this idea. And it kind of came, we were looking at the other groups around Wellington, especially Common Immunity out in Apuni, and they're so good. So I went out and met Julia out there, and I was amazed at what was happening out there, and the garden, and it was like a little magical fairyland out there. So just seeing the little projects and boomerang bags happening, and amount of waste. So I think it was 18 grand a year that we spend on waste. Just to be able to get that cost down will be a huge benefit for Vinnies, because that's money that's not going towards the purpose of why we're here, to our services. We managed to get to this stage, and then we had to, I was working on it, and I got it to a point where we got the space, started setting up tables, and then I don't have a sign background, so I was like, we need to get our coordinator on board, because I'm going to start making all these plans and has nothing to do with sewing. So we managed to find Caroline. I thought it was going to be hard. It was a unique position. It's not, obviously there's a sewing side, but then you need the person that is empathetic and community minded and can work with people and teach people and has that love for sustainability and the creative side. So
and project management.
Project management, and the whole admin side.
Gosh, it's a wonder you found anyone.
I was I'm sure this is going to be really hard. And then Caroline popped up. I was like, this is a bit too good to be true. What's wrong with this lady? She just fell into our lap, and she's grown it to a whole nother level.
That you had the mayor and the deputy mayor visit today.
Yes, we did.
Which is very interesting. I'm just interested in, as I mentioned, and as you know, textiles are one of the biggest growing sources of waste to the landfill. And so it would seem in the council's interest to want to do something about that. So, what was the mayor and the deputy mayor's interest in, how did they take the project?
We got some funding actually through the council, the Waste Minimisation Seed Fund.
Cool.
So it's just the small funding just to get things started.
Yep.
So that was a really good help and just push to get it off the ground.
Cool.
So I think they're totally open, all for this kind of program. And I think the benefits that they see within the community is a huge one. With some of the volunteers that they met and one of the stories they heard, they can see the real purpose of this outside of the environmental impact. And how important these are, especially as loneliness is, I think the tagline is, it's in a modern day poverty. So this is a huge, this is an amazing platform to combat the isolation that we're having to deal with now.
And anxiety. So we've got quite a few people who come who have anxiety, especially at home. So they find it a safe place to come when they're having to spend long times at home, especially during summer holidays, school holidays. So they come along for a few hours and it gives them a bit of phew.
Yeah.
And they can let go and just relax and have a chat with other people and support
when you're
each
doing,
other.
Like when you're doing things, it kind of breaks those boundaries to talk to people.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know if you've looked into Collaborate in the city. It's the first mental health gym.
Oh.
Really cool, really amazing stuff that they're doing, and they're working a lot on just those, you know, clay making and colouring in, but just that physical task to keep your mind settled down so you can actually start talking a bit more. So I think that's been a great part of it. But no, I think the council's all on board.
I think it'll get momentum in the community when they start to see the things that we make and Millie's putting them up. And when Millie says, oh, this is made out of two napkins, then people can start to think, I've got two napkins in my drawer that I've never used, or maybe I can go and make a bag. And, you know, we're happy for people to pop along and sit down and we can teach them to sew, because then they go away and hopefully they won't send us some of their textiles that they would in the future. They'll actually think about, yes, we can make Christmas decorations. We don't have to buy plastic baubles that have killed, you know, somebody's lungs in China. We can actually use our woolly jumper that we loved and we've shrunk by accident. Thank you, my partner. They will be returning on the tree to haunt you this year. My new brand new jumper that he shrunk. So yeah, I'm hoping that they sort of catch on and they think second, you know, and there are things that people love. I mean, I've got t-shirts that I love that got holes all over them, and I just sew them up, or I put a bead on them, and I just don't want to get rid of them. I think that's what we need to teach people, is that you can do something to make it
that's cool.
And maybe what will be nice is in hopefully 10 years time it's not cool to buy a new top every time you go out. People will be thinking, no, I don't want to do that, I don't want to be part of this. I don't need to have, I can actually sew an applique on, I can make a little flower and do something different to it every time I wear it. I just don't have to go and buy a new one.
When you're working with some of these fabrics, I mean, even if the clothes themselves aren't particularly damaged or anything like that, do you ever sort of work with some fabrics where you just look at it and you think, this is really not good quality?
But an example of that is we get a lot of horrible 1970s polyester. Some have got awesome prints on them, which we can put at the back of aprons because they just peep through, and we'll put a cotton up the front. We've done a couple of samples, but there's also stuff that, you know, has no redeeming qualities. But it goes to the school, and we've got Atari School at the moment weaving it into fences because they had a problem of coming into the primary school in the morning and finding rather a lot of dead birds who had flown into the fence. But now they're weaving that very bright, horrible polyester into the fence, which will stop the birds killing themselves on it. So that we will find, ultimately, there is a purpose for it.
But you see,
the polyesters can be shredded and made into this stuffing. So there's, with the right technology and the investment by the council and other organisations, there is a way to use it. It's just we need to get together as a group, I think, across with the governments and say, right, actually, what do the community need to deal with this problem? And then get the... I think it's all too overwhelming for a lot of people and they just block it off. Whereas if councils and companies like the formerly start to work together, then there's a possibility of solving the solution. And the thing is that actually solutions get solved normally at a grassroots level and then spread out. And it would be great if Wellington has a lot of young designers who are into sustainability, and it's becoming more popular, if they were to get together with the younger ones and start to change the mentality. And be able to have pop-up shops with young designers using repurposed, recycled textiles, organic cottons, cottons from that they know where it all comes from, the source of it, and it's ethical, and be able to deal with the end life of the products as well, and it go round in a circle, then Wellington is in, it's a small city with a perfect spot, with a younger generation and a generation that people moving in and out. There's something like 25% new people come in each year to Wellington. So you're getting all these talents from abroad that could also, you know, people like a guy called Brian who's coming back, who's worked in sustainability with major manufacturers. Joe, who's here, is a textile designer who's worked with major manufacturers. They have the links out of the country into this country that can help.
Mm.
So we could be a leader in it.
Can I also ask, this is probably, it's a very, we find this a very challenging issue associated with textiles that we're not sure quite how to deal with, this problem of synthetic fibres releasing microfibres into the environment every time you wash them, even when you wear them and move around, carpets, all that kind of stuff. And how do you, I mean, there doesn't seem to be an obvious answer about what to do with those textiles. How do you manage that sort of difficulty when you're repurposing textiles that may be, you know, like the polyester?
The dust is here. There's nothing we can do. We can reuse it. I mean, for me, I don't buy anything with polyester. I just have never had. I can't stand the stuff.
Well, it doesn't breathe, does it?
It doesn't breathe. No, it's horrible to wear. Yeah. The thing is just not to buy it.
Yeah.
Is if we all said, no, we are not buying this stuff, then they'd stop manufacturing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, buy 2-3 pieces a year. I mean, I do. That's all I do, is I buy 2-3 pieces of key, and they're expensive, but they last me years and years and years and years. They're good quality. They're designed. They're ethically sourced. They're cotton, and they last. And, you know, a bit like this. And I find the designers that do it, and I just wear it and wear it and wear it and wear it. But I personally avoid anything that's polyester, because I know what I know. I didn't know how bad it was until recently, but I just had a gut feeling, having worked in textiles, that the stuff, it's not good. It's not good on your skin.
Yeah,
it's infections. It's, you know, it's just a breeding ground for bacteria. And smell.
Yeah, and I guess it's like this whole thing about supply chains as well, which is a big question in the fashion industry generally. But even when you look at something like polyester, actually, it's often its manufacturer is encouraged by the fact that it can be made from recycled plastic that was once bottles. You know, so in the 90s it was kind of like, oh, this is the answer to our plastic bottle problem. We're just going to turn it all into polyester.
Right, yeah.
And but, you know, 10 years on, it's like, what have we done?
Yeah.
You know, so.
And unfortunately, that is always going to be the way with new technology and new things, is that you have to experiment a bit, and then you discover that actually that's not the best way, and then you have to change it. So it's always it's always going to be a moving thing, and some things will be successful and some won't, and then you'll change it. And that's part of the nature of design, is there'll be failures and then there'll be great successes. So now that it's been discovered, if this is actually going to be an issue, then they need to work out the solution.
Having done this project, and maybe just generally, do you feel, it's a question to both of you really, do you feel a bit hopeful? Because, you know, there's a lot of things to be just sort of, you can throw your hands up in the air sometimes, but particularly with the question of textiles, and you've having seen how much of it goes to landfill and all that kind of stuff, but seeing this and seeing the potential of this project, does it make you feel hopeful?
It makes me feel hopeful for the people that come here and have got it, or come here and then just want to learn to sew and then get it and then realise that they can recycle. What doesn't make me hopeful is that we accept companies like H&M into New Zealand, Topshop, companies like that in the high street, and that we still, you can walk down, you've got Cotton On, you've got Farmers, you've got all of those companies that are still mass producing items that people seriously don't need. And people are still buying tons and tons of clothes that they don't need. So then there's more around an education of what you do actually need, and more probably, this is really basic, but I read something about some Japanese lifestyle guru who was saying just like basically how, even how you fold your t-shirts, and I went home and folded my t-shirts how she'd said, and you put them on a slant, and I suddenly went, oh my gosh, I've got 50 t-shirts. I've had them, I haven't chucked them away, and I've had them for like 30 years.
Mm.
But it made me realise I don't need to buy any more t-shirts. In fact, those with holes in, I need to make into something else. But I think even learning just how to fold something, even thinking and reading a one-page article, made me realise that there's a lot of stuff I don't need and I shouldn't stop buying, and I need to repurpose. And I think it's about that education about what we need really for life, and linking that to, you're buying all this stuff, it actually sits in your wardrobe, it's dead cash. Actually, what could you be doing with that money? And teaching people that actually buying stuff doesn't give you happiness. What gives you happiness is having experiences. And I think once people learn about the experiences, and you go out and you have a day doing something, you'll remember that. You're not going to remember that t-shirt that you spent 3 minutes buying and you wore one night out. It's gone, it's a memory gone, but you spent 20-30 bucks on it, whereas you could have been having a nice time doing something that you would not normally do for 30 bucks, and you'll remember that probably a lot longer. And I think it's about teaching us about the values that will make it change. That's what we've got to get over somehow. But it does give me a little bit of hope that people come up here, want to learn how to sew or repair something, and they walk away and they go, oh, right. Opens their eyes. And if we can do just a little bit of that, then it's great.
And you never know what kind of ripple effects that might have. I mean, as you said, you know, like, already there's been all this interest just from people talking. And once, you know, some of these things start to go out into the community, you know, who knows who that's going to influence and how that might have an effect on people's attitudes.
And just opens their eyes, so maybe they'll read a bit more, or the bit of Facebook that they might have flicked through, you know, there's something from the former, or there's something from another organisation that they might have said, oh, I can't be bothered to read it. Maybe they will start to read it, and then maybe it will change their, it will influence them, which has happened with me. As I said, I read this Japanese lady's blog, and it was just like, and I would not have come across that if I hadn't been doing this and doing a bit of research about something else. I think schools are critical in doing this, and one of the things I was talking about with Boomerang the other day was, you know, we've got all these supermarkets that are getting rid of the plastic bags, and wouldn't it be lovely that in 2018 that the schools could, for 1 week, all across the country, make recycled bags with their kids. So they take an old item from their house and they make a bag for their mother and father to go shopping with, because if the kids make the bag, they're much more likely to use that bag. And so if we had this movement of kids going, right, we're going to use our old textiles and we're going to make them, so teach the kids that actually it can, doesn't have to go in the bin, it doesn't have to go wherever into landfill, it can actually be made into a bag, and then we can use it for the next 2 years, 3 years at the supermarket. Would be fantastic. And then they learn to sew, and they learn to do other stuff, and they learn to communicate, skills. Skills that come with that, working together, even the process of making a bag, they can learn something off of working in teams.
So I think it's important to get the younger school kids, when they're at that level, to make them start thinking about that reusable recycling. Like, I know my little brother and sister are at quite a new age school in Auckland. All the teachers are very young, and they have a huge environmental push in the school. So my brother who's 9 and sister who's 13 now, that's just coming normal. That's just normal to talk about the impact that we're having on the environment, and it's a cool thing because your mates, you know, your daughter at school and your mates are talking about it. So they actually will grow up as that being a normal thing, is to think about how to live in a bit more of a sustainable way.
But it's also important that if they make the bag, they'll understand that that bag takes an hour to make. And how is it that they're selling bags for 10 pence and stuff like that, and it took you that long to make it? How do you think it's made for that amount? Well, it's because somebody at the end of the road is on very low wages and not living a life, because they're working excellent. So there's a whole pile of conversations they can be having about ethical, how companies run, how people are paid, how old they're working, living conditions, etc., etc., around just that one project. But it would be great if we could do that just one week, a whole load around just a bag. What does that mean for our environment, for our workforce, for our labour?
Millie?
Yes.
Do you feel hopeful?
Oh, yes. Yes, I am. And I think I found, like, a lot of people do actually want to do this, but they just don't know. Like, it is overwhelming. So if there's more outlets for people to deal with the issues in a group setting, so it's not this major issue that I won't make a difference, so I won't bother even trying to start doing something different. So I've noticed that with people coming through. So I am hopeful, and I think I've noticed, especially I guess being in Wellington, there is a huge fashion side of it, and that whole environmental way of living is quite a lot more normal here than it probably is in a lot of other places. But the fact that, how Caroline said, with those big companies opening up, which has just happened, is a bit of a step back to where we want to go. And the fact that they've been left, operating now in New Zealand and in our cities, if that's going to be a norm with other big international brands coming in and setting up, that takes away, especially when you're trying to compete with those sort of prices. It takes away from your local clothes designers and that. And especially when a lot of them are ripping off really cool fashion labels. Buy a $15 dress that's been ripped off, so then you wouldn't really want to buy the real deal. So I am hopeful, but I do like to keep hopeful. And just seeing what's happening here and the response we've had, like we've had people from Australia contact us asking how can they replicate that.
Oh, wow.
So the fact that the reach that's happening shows that a lot of people do want to do it. They just don't have the resources or have never seen the platform before, so seeing that it is actually possible that a small charity in New Zealand can start something up, it hopefully will open the eyes that it's really not that hard. And once you start just talking, like I think when we just started reaching out and say, oh, this is kind of what we want to do, the amount of support we got before it was even established was amazing. So that shows that people do want it, they just often just need someone to start the conversation.
And we've been, we're sitting around here and we've had the wood donated by Bunnings. We've had a lot of our plastic boxes, scissors and stuff donated by Warehouse. They've put money into this as well. They've been enthusiastic about it once they've understood what it is. And said, it's great.
Could you see some of those big companies do have, they are now creating those departments that are there to research sustainable ways of what they're doing. Like I know with Nike and Adidas now have their own sustainable programs.
H&M do.
So like that's a good thing to see, that those major companies that often are some of the big issues are looking into ways and putting money into ways of dealing with it. So hopefully
it's not just a token.
It's not a front to.
So they are taking this seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing I will say is that we have had quite a few bits of things come through. So people have been sending boxes of T-shirts and stuff. They do need to remember that we have to find some way to get rid of it. And I'm just a little wary that we don't end up with
being flooded. So maybe don't send heaps of fabric to you. You've got enough as it is.
We've got enough. We can find homes.
Waste.
What has been suggested is if people do want to donate large amounts of stuff, that they really do need to, along with that, donate some cash towards Vinnie's as well. Because at the end of the day, we will need to sort that and ship it out to other companies that can deal with it, so to schools, and that obviously costs us money. So it'll get to a point where we will either have to say no, or we have to have donations along with it, can help fund the project to actually find homes for that in the community.
Also, people can just take inspiration from the project don't just have to give it to someone else.
No, exactly.
Or
they
come
can
in yourself and
come in yourself with it, or give us a call, or send us some photographs of the stuff that they might have, and we can then go to our volunteers, or we can have, we've got a computer here, we can have a Skype call, and you can say, right, we've got this, what do you suggest, any ideas? And we can all sit around and have a chat about it. So we did get sent two boxes of T-shirts, and as it happens, we're making some yarn out of it, and we actually did have an order from somebody for 150 backs of shirts. We're just very wary that we don't get the floor completely full up.
Also, I realised an important question I didn't ask before. So do you sell some of your creations?
Yes,
we will.
Okay.
Yes.
So people should just watch the space on that one.
Yes, the Facebook page. I think sign up for Facebook.
Yeah, so we do have our Facebook
Instagram.
Page, Vinnie's Riso, and Instagram Vinnie's Riso. So all one word, and it will come up. That's where everything will be updated. We are redoing our website. Once we have sort of set products that we know will sell and kind of get the pricing, we'll definitely start putting them up. And eventually we would love to be able to sell them some small bits in our shops as well. We have a little special stand there so people can come in and see them. And as it grows, we'll be at all the markets.
Yeah, we'll be doing markets,
we'll be busy.
And stuff.
Yeah,
but yeah, we'll pop items up on Instagram and Facebook with a price, and people can then buy it. We'll also, we've got a Trade Me account.
So we'll
be putting up vintage textiles, bits and pieces that we get that are really beautiful, and vintage clothing that we get donated.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sitting
down
with us.
Hey,
yeah.
Thank you.
And just, yeah, it's an absolutely awesome project that you've got. Yeah, as soon as we heard about it, we're like, oh, we need to talk. So, yeah, well done, and we'll definitely be watching this space as things develop. Sure.